Welcome to Yarning Disability, the FPDN podcast. I'm your host, Bernard Namok Jr. I'm a proud St. Paul Badu and Caribbean man from the Torres Strait. And I'm also the son of the designer of the Torres Strait Islander flag, Bernard Namok Sr., and an advocate for the First Peoples Disability Network. Join me now on Yarning Disability as we showcase First Nations people living with a disability, as well as their families and carers, and other industry professionals.
Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people are warned that the following podcast may contain the voices and names of people who are deceased. The First Peoples Disability Network and the producers of this podcast recognise the traditional custodians of the land on which this podcast is recorded. They pay respect to the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander elders past, present, and the future leaders of tomorrow. FPDN would like to acknowledge our founding elders and their lasting legacy, Uncle Lester Bostock and Auntie Gail Rankin, and acknowledge all First Peoples living with a disability.
Wiradjuri and Torres Strait Islander woman Katrina McKegney balances a busy working life while raising four children on her own, two of which have disabilities. Katrina has ties to Saiba Island, Nagi, and Darnley Island in the Torres Straits, and to the community of Bumunga in far north Queensland. But today, she and her children live on the lands of the Kumbangya people on the sleepy coastal town of Woolgoolga on the mid-north coast of New South Wales. She yarned with FPDN advocate Carly Wallace about her journey as a First Nations mum of children with disabilities. And just a heads up, the following conversation may contain some coarse language.
I'm a single mom. I work 4 days a week at the bilingual school here, and it's the first one in New South Wales. I've only just started this job. It's only been about a month in now since school's been back. And it's been pretty full on, but also really exciting because I do like learning support. So I'm also working with kids with extra needs.
So you've got four children. Can you tell me about your kids, first of all? Like, who are they? What are they like? What's an average day look like in your house?
Well, Jairus has just started high school. So that's like a whole different ball game, especially from him going from, I guess, a private school education for the past couple of years into a public school. He's really started to encounter all the things that we all go through as black kids in high schools. And I think it's been a bit of an eye opener for him. So I'm really just trying to navigate him not being reactive, especially because he's never been that kid. Jazara is in year six. She's still at St. Augustine. She's got a diagnosis of ADHD. And so on the daily, like, she'll just say whatever she thinks, whatever she wants. And especially, like, she's on medication, but she'll get to a certain point and she don't care. Like, she'll drag her sibling, she'll slam shit in the house. Like, it's full on. Like, and I've really had to learn not to take things personally when she's having an episode. Sammy is six. He's not six. He just turned seven. And he comes to work with me when I changed him over school. So before I got a job there, and I knew that they were accepting kids with extra needs and stuff, and suddenly their second year of opening that school, I was going to be putting him over there just for the extra support. And then I get a job there as the extra support. So, and he's like, oh, mum, you're following me. Sort of. I think I will probably do that for the majority of his life, like just as a bit of a protection thing. And then I've got Gracie and she's in preschool.
So Jazara, does Sammy have a disability diagnosis?
Or? Yeah, sorry, he does. He's got ASD. The PED also says he has ADHD, and then he's got like a global developmental delay with like his speech. And I don't know, there's some genetic abnormalities there, which they don't think is why he has ASD, which is good. So he's got more diagnoses than I guess Jazara, but I actually don't think the ADHD really fits him properly, because I reckon I could just give all my kids diagnoses myself that day. I probably need one too, Jesus.
Hey,
No,
true.
you know, like you really start to look into things. So he's got more extensive needs, whereas Jazara, who's got ADHD, for her it's more her focus. She's very bright, like there's no delays. But Sammy, there is.
Yeah. So when did I guess you realize, obviously because Jazara's older, that maybe she might have some differences and oh look, I might have to look into that, or has somebody else picked up on that, or did you pick up on that as a mum?
Oh, I sort of picked up on it, like when she would just be like really emotionally, and I don't even want to say all over the place because it's not the right word, but it's like a regulation. Like it just, not that it wasn't there, I just sort of started to realize like there's tantrums a lot more. It's really intense. Like it's not a gammon thing, and she gets over, like she can really go on and on, which I guess like now I know is like a pretty big part of ADHD.
What was it like before you knew, as like you're trying to work it out? Because I know a lot of our mob are like, this kid's hard-headed because we don't see disability. Like, did you have that type of?
Yeah, I was like, I actually, and like, I still, even to like this day, sometimes I'm like, I can't wait till this kid moves out. But like, because it was just so intense, like the intensity of it. And I'm like, thinking, I've got to deal with this shit on my own every day. And it's heavy, and it's still heavy. But I think now, like, it's been a couple of years in, and I don't know if I've gotten better at it or if it's like the medication definitely helps. But yeah, like it was really intense for a while. And I think they actually, her and Sammy both got diagnoses in the same year, now that I'm thinking about it. Pretty certain he was first with the ASD and she was a bit later in the year. Like it sort of just gave me like a little bit of a really huge understanding of these like diagnoses, and just, you know, going back into the workforce in the same year, I really started to see how much of a spectrum these diagnoses are
Yeah.
with other kids across the board. I'm like, wow. So.
Yeah. And I think early diagnosis is something that is going to help people, but the issue is sometimes we don't always see disability in our community, and we just are dealing with so many things. And you know, as a single mom, you know, you've had so many things over the years, no doubt, to, you know, survival stuff that people just go into when you're trying to raise children on your own. And yeah, like that emergency, I guess, to get kids diagnosed isn't always there. So when you have two in one year and now you have some sort of explanation, I guess, of like what you've been juggling with, was that diagnosis, getting the actual diagnosis, was it easy or was it really difficult?
Oh, for Jazara, it was like handing out candy. Now, Gavin, no, hers was quite easy because she just really fit the bill. I guess I was a little bit like taken aback by it because we'd been through COVID and there was like the home learning, and she'd finish her work by like the Tuesday night or the Wednesday. And I'm like, because you know, the biggest thing is attention and focus. And I just thought, bullshit, like this kid's just extra. But then, good way.
Good news.
But then I've realized now that she done really well learning that way, because she could go into her room, close everything up, and be left alone. So there was that, you know, the talking in the class, the other conversations, all of that stuff, it just wasn't there. But yeah, so her getting her diagnosis was quite easy with like the teachers' reports and stuff like that.
Yep.
And then when I was doing like the meltdown side of things and a little bit of the defiance stuff, so he was like, yeah, it's ADHD,
Yeah.
like it's classic basically. And then we sort of left it. I didn't medicate her straight away, but I have for the past year now.
How come you left that for a while?
Because again, we, you know, there's a lot of stigma, I guess, around these diagnoses in our community and that you get from family. And I think being a single mum, a lot of my support comes from outside, like extended family. And I was like, oh, that's just, you know, she's just strong-headed, like she's headstrong and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, well, yeah, she is, but it's not like she's trying to be a bad child. Like when there's an imbalance, you know what I mean? And often with disabilities, especially when it's like cognitive or psychological, because we don't actually see it, it's an internal thing, it's not treated the same as if she was in a wheelchair. which is really hard. And so I did, like, I sort of left it for a bit and I was like, nah, like, we need to try this. And don't get me wrong, like, it hasn't fixed everything. But there's still, but there's some parts of it where I'm like, you know, that's just who you are. Like, she was talking about, oh, Mum, I'm still getting in trouble for chatting in class. And I'm like, yeah, but you're like an 11-year-old girl. Like, that's, do you know what I mean? I'm like,
it's hard to distinguish what's a behavior of the disability as opposed to just being a normal kid, right?
Personality. But, and she is like a really sociable kid and whatever, like all of those things. But yeah, it's her being medicated, like us having that year of not doing it was a lot of outside influences. And then I got to a point where I was just like, you know what, like, stuff this, like, I need to do number one, what's best for her, and try it at least. And then when I did, I was like, oh, well, that was actually what was best for me too. Because she dropped a whole other level, like, in just her way, from being emotionally up here, like 90% of the time, to like, you know, yes, she'll hit a peak, but she can come back down, so she could regulate a lot better. And I remember one of my closest cousins, when we'd gone up to Brisbane to see her, Catherine, there, and she was like, oh, yeah, 100%, like, you can see a really big difference in her. But see, I think it's really working in education, you see a lot of kids like this as well. Yeah. And we notice a difference when they're medicated or not. And Catherine could pick up on it. Obviously, she was close to us and that. But, yeah, like, it was one of the best decisions for me to try it. And I had to, yeah, consider what was best for my child. But I also know how hard it is when dealing with mob and extra family. And it's like, oh, you're giving him drugs. Oh, it's legalized speed. And it's like,
there's a lot of, like, myths, aren't there? And a lot of, like, misconceptions. And
100%. And we're still, because it's a controlled drug, obviously, for her, I've got to see the ped every 3 months, which is time consuming. But that's what I have to do for us to stay on top of it. So I do it.
And what about Sammy? What, with his diagnosis, was it difficult to get done?
He had a referral by Dr. Naidu to this place off Randwick Hospital down in Sydney. And they actually specialise in, like, I don't want to say diagnosing kids, but kids with, like, delays and, like, these things that they can't quite pick. So he thought he had Sammy had ASD, but he didn't diagnose him. Sammy actually got referred. He was actually diagnosed on a Zoom call with these people.
Okay. How did you feel about that?
It was really weird. I was like, I got really defensive, actually. I was like, you know, you haven't even met the kid. But now with my understanding of autism and the way it can present in children, like, I know now that there was a lot of things that I didn't see, but I also know that was due to a limited understanding of what it was. Like, I just thought he had a speech delay, you know, so we started to chase that up. Whereas in the initial speech we saw, and he's so lovely, through, like, the hospital and whatever, like, he knew straight away. He's like, ASD. But You can't just say that to parents either, you know what I mean?
It's a tough subject, isn't it? It's like, because it changes people's worlds, right? It changes your whole household. Like, because now in the same year, you've got two children with disabilities and which really need their own support. You know, they need extra support. It's not different support. It's just like, oh, we need to do extra things for them so they can live their best life, right? And so you can have a functioning household
and family, like, and
family, yeah. So giving that diagnosis, like, was there any cultural kind of aspect that ever came into this diagnosis? Like, did everyone in those places, hospitals and others, was there anyone in a cultural, I guess, job or position that came in those times in the health system to help you through this?
I think we were actually in a really shitty position when all of this happened, with it being 2020.
Yeah.
And COVID. Like, there with Sammy being diagnosed on Zoom, like, we never went to Sydney. But, like, I know it's the right diagnosis. And it was all play-based stuff that I was leading and they were just watching. There was this agency that sort of helps link you up with, like, NDIS service and does all the, you know, because Sammy was still young. A lot of it was that early intervention stuff until he got his diagnosis and then could get a better NDIS package and that. And there was a Koori guy that worked there. He was like a bit shit with his job, but his manager, and she was this white woman, like she was really onto it. And I think she was onto it because, number one, like I think she's seen that I was becoming very disconnected.
Yeah.
Like I just can't deal with this. Like I'm working, I've got four kids, and like things have changed so much now, like with my youngest being in preschool, but she was still a baby, you know. Sleepless nights, there's all of these things that factor into it. And I was like, you know what? I really don't give a fuck about these diagnoses. Basically, that was my attitude, especially for Sammy. I was like, well, he's got it. We'll navigate it. Like, yeah. I can't deal with this right now. But she was really patient and like she didn't give up. And I think sometimes as mob, we need those sort of people that aren't going to be lax or relaxed in their approach to us. Yeah. And she was really good with that. So she was really good. And Gullumbilla, there's the Aboriginal Medical Service here, the child health nurse, she's amazing. But she's seen like all of our kids, like, you know, from babies all the way through. So she was really good with appointments, with just a yarn, with stuff being faxed over to the peds. Like she was really good. So I think you'll find like, I don't even want to say services. I think it's more one or two people in these services that actually give a crap about what they're doing.
Yeah. Whereas
like any place, it's like, oh, I'm just here to do my job. It's a 9-to-5 for me. But when we're dealing with people, you can't always have that approach because it's people and families and it's children. Like,
and those disabilities don't switch off from 9-to-5. They keep going, right? And supports happen after hours. Like we need, like, ADHD is not on the NDIS list as a disability. You know, for people with ADHD, they're not going to be able to get support for NDIS. So someone like Jazara, when she's a bit older as well, like I'm sure you could do with that now.
100%.
You know what I mean? Like, how does that affect you? Like, should it be on the list?
Oh, look, I definitely think it should in terms of, like, you know, like that respite and there's someone to come in to be able to do activities with them because it's really hard. Like, obviously, I'm her mother, but it's like you have to be present all the time for your kids. And it's like a kid's just had a meltdown. Everyone else needs shit done and you've still got to be in control. And some days it's like, oh, like it really feels like an uphill battle. So for ADHD to not be on the list for NDIS is, it's bullshit. And it makes it really challenging because Sammy's got a package I know I can tap into and Jazara's got shit. What, her peds bulk build so she can be medicated. Sammy doesn't need medication. He'll concentrate at school. You know, it's two completely different things. And basically, ever since his diagnosis for Sammy, I haven't taken him back. I haven't taken him back to the peds. So that's been like a couple of years now and our doctors at the Aboriginal Medical Service are like, oh, we should probably get him back in. But I'm exhausted.
Yeah,
and it's not even a which child needs more. It's like I know for now, he's okay.
Yeah, it's managing like what you can handle, right?
And, yeah,
and sometimes you should just be able to be a mum, not a carer, not a trying to handle everything. Like you should just be able to be Jazara and Sammy and everyone else in the household's mum. That if you need some support and some respite, you should be able to get that, and then have good mum time with her. As yeah. Well, you know, so
a lot of being so tense and charged all the time.
Yeah. Which,
you know, the medication has made it better, but now we're at a different stage because she's hitting puberty. So there's already hormonal changes happening as well. And we've got an imbalance. So it's like, Jesus Christ. But it's full on. But I mean, we're navigating it and we're getting there, but it's definitely not easy.
These systems, I guess, are the things that our mob are up against, and they put the barriers in place, you know, when we're just trying to get through. But that medical model of fixing and diagnosing and prescribing, yes, it needs to be there, but we also kind of think about things in our culture of like a cultural model of care, you know, like on top of having some medication, what else would my children need? And I guess, like, what role does culture play in your kids' lives and their care?
Oh, look, I think culture is actually what brings them back down. Like for Jazara, you know, I know when she's done a fair few weaving workshops out at Yarrawarra here, and it's because her hands are busy and she's got to concentrate, and it's quite, you know, it's just soft yarns and it's you're outdoors, so there's all of these good things happening, like, you know, there's some vitamin D, there's a yarning circle sort of happening. And you don't, like, when we're out there on these days, I won't see the kid for 3 or 4 hours because she's sitting there engaged in this activity that is regulating, helping her regulate herself, I guess.
Therapeutic, like she's sitting and
Like
listening
she's
and
just, she's in this whole other zone. So little things like that, I'm always like, oh, I really need to pursue this more for you because I know how good it is for you. And then Sammy, like, oh my gosh, she's like the proudest black kid ever, right? It's so fun.
Tell me about it. What
And
does it
because like
mean?
and yeah, and I mean, because Jairus is just like, he knows he's a black fella, but you know, he's not out there, but he's not shame, but he's like, yeah, well, I know I'm black, I don't need to go on and on about it. And Sammy's like, yes, mum, Aboriginal school and Aboriginal flag and all of this. But like a lot of what they do, and with it being bilingual, it really is establishing that connection to land and culture and country and that connection. Like, so he has just thrived and it hasn't even been a full term. But all the language, and because he's had that speech delay when he first started, and he does it a lot, and I shouldn't laugh, but like when he's not in a comfortable social setting or if he doesn't know you, he won't talk, and everyone's like, oh, he's real shame. And I'm like, well, you like, I mean, you could say that, but it's more his confidence within himself to speak isn't there because, you know, he's delayed. He'd been delayed by a couple of years. But like, we'd be at home, or like, you know, we're driving home one day and he's like, Mum, I gotta jump out of here, I gotta go jalabai. And he's using like their language word for toilet. And this is after like 2 or 3 weeks at school. And I was like, okay, like driving and trying to get out and like, you know, just rushing him. So now he's become a lot more comfortable to give their, like, the Gumbangia language and that a go. And I said to him one day, like before he started school, I said, you know, we're not Gumbangia, we're not from here. And he cried. And I'm like,
Gone.
calm down. Because he's so attached to it, you know.
Language,
But
yeah.
like, and it also is because like there's a whole lot of other factors, but this is where it's strongest for them because we're so far from our own mob, which it really does suck at times. And I wish I could give them that more, but like we do the best with what we can. And I think for him and the setting he's in, like he can only thrive because that is right beside his education. Like it's not something that is two separate things, it's all intertwined. So.
And it's working side by side and Western and traditional together, and it's having great results for him. So that's awesome.
Yeah, heaps.
So like you were speaking earlier about, you know, your oldest kids and they're getting a bit older, puberty's coming into the thing, and then their identity as you know, visible black children as well, I'll say, for people that don't know you and your children. What's, I guess, you know, that we talk a double disadvantage, right, of our mob, who have disabilities but are also discriminated against because of their race. And that's a very real issue in our community. It leads us to places like the justice system and all these other places, as you know. I guess what I'm asking is, like, what's your biggest fear? Like, what's some of your fears as a mom of children with Aboriginal Island children with disability? I know it's a hard question to
Yeah,
ask.
like I'm already feel like I'm gonna cry, but you just don't want your kids to be to end up in those systems. And I mean, you know, I know that my son that's older with no disabilities is struggling. So imagine what our children with disabilities will go through. And especially like I think for Jazara, because there's like I know her self-regulation is quite, you know, and I know being at the Catholic school, it's not that they're better than a public school, don't get me wrong, because there's stuff there. But I mean, you know, there's a lot of these lessons that are about love and kindness, and it's really pushed with them. But once you're in high school, it's like open season. I know for her, I'm like, it use will push her too far, and she will slide somebody, or what will come out of her mouth will not be nice at all. Like, you know, but like the minute the minute like Jairus was in the car telling us about one boy, and he's like, "Mum, just all day he's been calling me a black dog, a black sea, and blah blah blah," and her straight away from the back seat, she's just not the kid to mess with. And it's okay when you're a child, but there's a certain point where, you know, if you're going to be flogging up white kids, man, you're going to get charged. Like, and it's not right, but how, you know, it's such a, it really makes me worried to let her go into that. So I've been looking at, like, you know, I guess in terms of further education for her, our school where I am now, they're looking at opening up, like a bit like the Murray School, where it'll be kindy to year 12.
Yeah, perfect.
She could go there in year eight, should be in year eight. She's too smart for me to repeat. I can't keep her down in year six. I'm like, great, so you've got a disability, but you're super smart. So, but, you know, it's like I can't not push her. Like, she's got to move on, sort of thing. So I was thinking of maybe doing like a bit of like distance education for her, because I know she's like really good with her own learning, and then like coming over to work in year eight. But I guess we'll navigate that a bit further on, like a bit later down the track in a couple of months' time. I'll have to really consider what I'm going to do with her, because I know she's not the child, and she never has been, even prior to having a diagnosis or anything. She's not the child to test. And then for Sammy, I'm like, because when we're at the geneticists for all the genetic stuff, you know, they do your height and your weight, and they take, they're really like, and I don't want to say the word because it wasn't like that when I was in the appointment, but they really scrutinize you. Like, they take photos of his face. It's to check for any abnormalities. Is there a difference in his hand size, his foot size? They measure everything. They basically, like, ask him to take his shirt off. He stood there, you know, just, they were really lovely about it. But no one gives you a heads up. And that's the thing, you know, I didn't know that this is what this appointment meant, what was going to happen. When they went and done that, so he's like 98th percentile for height and weight. He's a big black boy now, but he's going to grow into a big black man with a disability. And it's like, you know, like it actually really scares me. And him, you know, like out of all the kids, he's really tolerant. Like, he puts up with a lot from the others before he'll react. But when he reacts, like, he'll drive them, and he's not afraid of Jairus or Zara. And they've got like 5 or 6 years on him, you know. So, yeah, it's like open season when he starts. And I've physically, it's like, because once he gets to that point, he's wild and that's it. And you know how some of our kids go, like, some, you know, it's like, I want to, that's it. Especially for their brothers and sisters, eh? So I'm like, that sort of scares me for him, because I'm like, you know, but I know what will save him is the fact that he's over where he is now, and he's only going to school with other black kids.
Yeah.
And where it's like his blackness is like celebrated. Do you know what I mean? And there's that culture and all that. So I think that is something that will really help to bring him back. And there's other pathways within that. But there's no way I'd put him into a normal high school.
And it's hard, isn't it? Because like other parents, like people with kids that don't have disabilities, you know, they navigate parenthood, and it's hard for everyone. Everyone has their own challenges, but the added difficulties of race, you know, in our society, for our mob in our own country. And we know what it's like, you know, when our kids present differently to society. With their disability, it often is misunderstood on top of their race, and it leads to all sorts of places. So it's just something that most parents would not have to think about, whereas Aboriginal mothers, Torres Strait Islander mothers, have to think about, how do I protect my child on an extra level, which is, it's not fair, hey? It's really doesn't.
100% it's not. And I think, like, about a year ago, maybe 14 months ago now, I was actually thinking of packing up and going back remote. It was just before Sammy started school, and I was like, I knew, like, in my head I was weighing it up, because I'm like, what are the pros and cons? And that was one of the biggest things of why I wanted to go back. I'm like, if you're around people that are just like you and that look like you, yes, you will have a disability, but you're around mob. Whereas here, like, my kids really do stand out like a sore thumb, and we're not, you know, it's not really our mob. And I don't mean to take that away from the really amazing support networks that we do have. Especially like the friends and that we have made. But when they're around their own mob, it's like, oh, it's almost like there's a bit of safety in that. Like there may be mocking or whatever, but it's more like a quirk rather than he's slow or, you know.
Yeah. We see each other as each other. Yeah. Like I think that's what you're.
And I think, you know, prior to, it's not even prior to colonization, but early colonization, you know, when you read these stories and accounts of like white people that were accepted into mob. And you know what? Like we only have to look around us now to see how many of these white fellas or whatever are brought
in. That's my dad. Don't talk about my dad like that, Nagel. Well,
there's so many mob in my family that are like that too. And they're basically like, they find a place amongst mob. Like I feel like mob super accepting. Like I hate taking Jazara to anything that isn't to do with mob, like any events or anything. See, when she's around mob, the way that she presents, it's not seen as a, she's this dominant, aggressive kid. It's like, oh, she's staunch. And she is. She'll tell whoever straight, like, well, hang on, that's mine or that's my brother's. And, you know, and I'm like, oh, my God, here she goes. Like,
yeah.
But mob, they don't take that offensively. They see this side of her. You know, whereas when she's around white people, it's like, oh, you're disrespecting me, you're speaking out of line, you shouldn't talk back. And
she's polarizing as opposed to staunch in two different communities. Isn't it funny? Yeah.
And it's really hard for her to navigate. It's like she's sent out of class like every other day. And it's
but like, if you found the right person to work with her and the right teacher that harnesses that stuff, it's a different story, right? You know, she
different
thrives.
Story. Yeah. And I mean, I think for Sammy, you know, like, so at work where he is, like, we're all Aboriginal staff and everything. It's almost like a family sort of thing because our school's quite small. And I think just having teachers that are mob, just it makes a massive difference. Even if you had, like, white teachers. So there's this one teacher over where Zara is, and I used to work there too. Like, she's been married into mob. Like, her husband, she got three kids, you know, knows what it's like out at Bree Warriner and like, you know, she knows what it's like to be around mob and how to work with mob children to bring out, you know, their strength. She thinks Jazara is great.
Yeah.
You know? So I'm like, oh, if only, she, you know, you could have been her teacher. But you know, you get what you get and you try and navigate it the best you can.
Well, I think the thing too is, like, we have had to walk in two worlds for so long, for generations as blackfellas. I think there is that now we can point the finger and say, hey, we'd love you to walk in our world and understand us. So I don't think that's something that you should take what you get. I think it's us, you know, self-determination and wanting better. What are your hopes for your children or your kids, especially your kids with disabilities?
I actually, and it's probably like, oh, probably a bit of a gammon thing, but like I just want them to grow up and to be happy and safe. Like, you know, I want them to be able to navigate the world without these barriers of, number one, being black, or two, being disabled. You know, they're two really big things that they have to overcome. And then it's like for Jazara, and I'm like, oh, and you're a girl, like you gotta be a black woman and and you're staunch. God, you know, and it's not a bad thing, but I just know it's not going to be easy for them. That worries me. And then I sort of think, you know, I'll get to a point like, well, obviously I'll die. It's like, who then will be the person to advocate and step up for these guys? And without a doubt, like, I know Jazara will advocate for herself and probably the whole entire family, but, you know, it's such a big, like, that's my main worry, because for them, all I want is for them to be able to be okay. Like, grow up, be happy, do what makes you happy, you know, in the context of not do whatever you want. There's obviously limits, but just to be happy and functioning within society.
Thanks to Katrina McKegney for sharing her family's story on Yarning Disability. If there's anything you heard in today's episode that raises concerns for you, there is help available. You can contact 13YARN on 13 92 76 or Beyond Blue on 1300 22 46 36 or Lifeline on 13 11 14. Thanks for listening to Yarning Disability. I'm your host, Bernard Namok Jr. Follow FPDN on our social media accounts to stay up to date with future episodes and information. You can also visit our website at www.fpdn.org.au.